if you have fun with it, that's going to come across. And I think that's the missing piece. That's where I would start if I was going to really trust an agency or musicians to create something for me. It was like, how do we have a conversation or multiple conversations to get us to the most fun way of executing this? Because if you're having fun, you're going to come up with something unique. If you're not having fun, you're just going to try and get it out the way as quick as possible, right? If it's just transactional, I don't think anybody really gets to that point of exploring an idea beyond what's written on the paper. So that's, although it's hard to predict like what makes a successful sonic brand, I think it's more about the process that gets you to that place.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the second part of my conversation with George Holliday and Luke Mosley.
So when you were working with the spirit manufacturer, were you using sounds from their actual product in order to make the sonic logo or the audio brand in general?
Yeah.
The main thing we actually made for them was with the sound of their bottle pop. It was quite tonal. It was a real cork pop, and it was tonal enough that we could put it onto a keyboard, and we essentially made them a piano out of their own bottle cork. And
from that point
we then composed the piece of music from there. Because when you have the tone and the attack, you know, when you hear the sound on a piano in some way, shape or form, it's like anyone that's played a synthesizer and messed around with all the different sounds that you get. All the sounds will force you into a direction of how quick you can make melodies. You know, how fast paced are the melodies? Can you do chords, for example? It might be too messy if it just doesn't work out. So it kind of pushes you into the direction of like, what could a melody and what could a song sound like with this particular sound? And as you add these different elements into a piece of music, it kind of pushes you gently down an avenue that maybe you weren't expecting, but it's like the sound of the brand actually like gently pushes you into a certain direction. And that was really fun on that particular track, to figure out how many different sounds can we get from not just the bottle, but the warehouse and all the clinky sounds of the doors in the warehouse, and, you know, really make it close to the actual brand, the family. The voices of the family that created the spirit are actually in the song as well. They've become rhythmic patterns. So we really embedded the whole brand physically into that song.
Well done. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. So what was the emotion you were trying to capture with that one? And I'm gathering that emotion would be a mixture of who they were and who their audience is.
Yeah, Luke, do you want to hit that one? If you've got any memory in a search?
They're sort of going for the 18 to 35 people in bars, wanting to let loose, have fun. So it was very carefree, light, kind of like just enjoy the summer. You know, they're a Scandinavian brand, so they have a lot of darkness in their geography in terms of like the winter. Is it the winter, or the winter's really long? No, the summers are really long, aren't they? The winters are really short. The nights, the days.
At the moment, yeah, it's quite long days there at the moment.
Yeah, because it's up in the north of Scandinavia. It's like till midnight it stays light, or it's like 24 hours a day, essentially.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
I can't sort of even imagine what Iceland. That would do to your circadian rhythm. My goodness.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it was just a lot of lightness with some energy in there. We're always exploring a couple different emotions. So, you know, one was they're still very prevalent in bars in terms of like rounds of shots. So it had to have, you know, a section in energy, which was like, let's party, you know, who's going to buy a tray of shots. And then also they do a lot of like cocktail making content on their socials. So then it's like, you know, a lot of that sort of like quite diffused light outside in the summer, sort of like by a lake in Scandinavia, just relaxing with like a late afternoon drink. So kind of moving between those two sections, or like starting there and then finishing, you know, at 2 a.m.
Yeah, that whole journey was quite fun to get in there. And the bottle pops we were talking about, where the keyboard lent itself very nicely to that sort of chilled house, is probably the best way to describe it. Like the middle section of the song, because we released it up on Spotify as well, so they've now got it on all their bottles and you can scan it with a QR code and party with them. But that middle piece of that particular song is that, like Luke was saying, by the lake, sunset, before it then slams in at the end. And also they sponsor a lot of high energy events as well. There's a game called Bandy, which is sadly a dying sport, but it's basically ice hockey, but the early version of it. And, you know, that's high impact, as you can imagine, with ice hockey.
Yeah, let me tell you, ice hockey is still a big thing where I am.
You should check it out. Yeah. It's like two times the size of an NHL ring.
I will definitely have to check it out. Yeah.
It is. It's a real good game. And it's a big part of the heritage of Sweden as well. It's a real old game. And that's sadly why it's sort of, I don't know why it's not fine, but ice hockey is taking over, but the sport of bandy is the particular version that's sort of dying out at the moment. But high energy events, they do a lot of events with Red Bull, which is obviously a very high energy brand as well. So there's quite a lot that we were trying to get into that one piece of music, and ultimately as well getting across that they are a family brand. You know, this is their big mission is they want younger people, if they're going to drink, they want them to be drinking better quality alcohol and not outpricing the better quality alcohol. That's kind of their sort of mission on a local level. So there's a lot to squeeze into one track, but we knew them by the time we were making the music, we knew them well enough that we could just relax into composing. And I think by the time we got to that point, I think the song really shines in its own way for specifically that.
Wonderful. Yeah. And I imagine they were quite grateful to have an actual sound to what they bring to their clients, to the people experiencing their brand. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's pretty amazing what an audio brand can do. And I want to get into what the two of you think makes a successful audio brand. Do you have a thought on that?
Wow.
I don't think it's one size fits all for me. I think that's...
Oh, no.
I think that's the thing that that stops a lot of brands even exploring what their own sonic branding could be. A lot of people think that it needs to be a sonic logo, they need to be running ads, et cetera. So I think it's whatever starts a brand off, whatever is the most effective way. It's really easy to talk about like what it does for your brand awareness and your recall and all the data and all the science and everything. But we all know that sounds awesome and it works wonders and miracles.
Well,
so it's
we know.
But it's just actually getting it out there. So I think for me, a successful sonic branding strategy is something that has the lowest friction to actually getting to market, to showing people the effectiveness of it. And then it can just be developing from there.
What about you, George? What do you think?
I think it's so hard to understand what is potentially going to be successful for a brand until it's out in the market and you've tested it in some way, shape or form. But also that's incredibly hard because you need to be sticking to it for years for it to become like the McDonald's of sonic branding, right? But I also think we kind of rely on statistics far too much in the creative phase of doing all of this. I think when we really understand the brand and you get to have fun with what it is they're about, I think that's ultimately what's going to make the most successful sonic logo for them. We've all heard like a tech brand type sonic logo, right? They all kind of sound very similar. It's a lot of feedback that we used to hear a lot was like, oh, it just feels like a tech brand, because all the briefs were leaning towards that. Nobody's sort of there saying, oh, you're a nature-based brand, let's go and record the sounds of mushrooms growing over the 2 weeks, right? Which you can do. Like, there are microphones out there that can do that kind of thing. And if you have fun with it, that's going to come across. And I think that's the missing piece. That's where I would start if I was going to really trust an agency or musicians to create something for me. It was like, how do we have a conversation or multiple conversations to get us to the most fun way of executing this? Because if you're having fun, you're going to come up with something unique. If you're not having fun, you're just going to try and get it out the way as quick as possible, right? If it's just transactional, I don't think anybody really gets to that point of exploring an idea beyond what's written on the paper. So although it's hard to predict like what makes a successful sonic brand. I think it's more about the process that gets you to that place.
Yeah, it's a good point. Very much so. And to that point, I want to raise the elephant in the room because you're both musicians. And I'm sure AI has had a big inroad into what you do.
Yeah,
you knew it was coming, right? I mean, you know, for me as a voice actor, it's certainly a going concern. So, I mean, I know it's a going concern for everybody. What do you think about what's happening to the music industry now that AI is on the scene? And is it changing how you two work on your projects?
At the minute, it's not.
Yeah. No, at the minute it's not. I think I can understand people's concern, but as we've alluded to in this conversation, you know, a lot of people don't speak music and still need a lot of people to interface. You know, voiceovers, I can really understand the concern because people do speak to each other. So, you know, and people have had conversations where the tone's been off, or, you know, when they want to manipulate a conversation, they know how to do that with their voice. So, like, people are very adept at being able to understand the nuances of the human voice. Like, if you're not a musician, that's much harder to do when you're talking to AI. And still, the quality of it is still a lot to be lacking. And it's weird. It's going to sound a bit of a juxtaposition, but like, very little of what we bring to brands is actually making the music, is like the physicality of making the music. You know, George and I could make 3 songs in a day if we wanted to. It's like, that's not really what brands are employing us for and having us as partners. It's for the understanding. It's for the ability to translate their larger goals and their marketing strategy and how music can help elevate that and support it. And most of our work goes into figuring out what that is. And then we can make it in a week. You know, we might be talking to a brand for 3 or 4 months to figure things out and getting everyone on the same page. And the making the music's the shortest part. So it's like, you can try it with AI, and a lot of people have, and why wouldn't you? Like, I think AI is great. I think when it comes to intellectual things, why wouldn't you use it? It's fast as hell. But when it comes to emotional things, like how can you expect a computer to be as emotionally adept as a human, when that's really our differentiation between computers, is like, we have that nuance. And it's like, I read a great thing the other day that it was sort of, it's a little bit higher than this in terms of the position of the pyramid of, you know, robots taking over our world. But the audacity to say that the AI will replicate humans means that there must be somebody out there that can explain what consciousness really is and how humans think. Yeah. And we can't even do that between ourselves, figure out exactly what it is. So the idea that all
Such
of a sudden
a good point.
We can create a technology that's going to figure all that out and then put us out of business, essentially, to me is like, yeah, we're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's going through an algorithm, really, that's just replicating what we are, not really being.
It's not expanding.
Us.
Yeah, exactly. It's not about the nuances of it.
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening, so it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show.
Yeah. What do you think, George?
I totally agree. I mean, that conversation about consciousness, Luke and I have had that conversation a couple of times, and I think it's kind of one of those conversations you want to have whilst you're lying under a starry night, because nothing can replicate that feeling of lying under the starry night. And I kind of feel the same about AI. And of course, there'll be so many use cases that are great for that. But there'll also be a lot of brands that will stay. Well, there's a lot of, I'll keep it on brands for now because I think it paints the picture easier, but there's a lot of brands that will always just be a few steps behind because they're relying on AI to create the emotion for them. And when Luke was talking, I was thinking about when CGI came into the film industry and everyone was like, oh, nobody's going to go out and make films anymore. We're just going to hire a studio and make everything in one room. And there's some incredible CGI now. There's so many films that I've seen. I'm like, is that real? Is it not? You know, like when you see animals that are CGI now, like it's incredibly good.
Yeah, but it's too much. I think when they do that with certain, like,
I think it's overkill. But yeah. Have you watched the new Mission Impossible film?
I haven't yet, actually. Oh. I've been wanting to, but I haven't yet.
It's incredible.
I hear it's very good.
It's incredible. And do you know what I turned to straight away? I turned to my dad and I was like, because I went to watch it with my parents. And I said, can you believe he was hanging off that plane for the last half an hour of the film? Right. Yes, they like CGI'd out the harnesses that he was wearing. But Tom Cruise is hanging off a plane and he's like 60 something. But you felt it. And you could see the energy of that whole final scene. And I won't give any spoilers to anyone that hasn't, but the whole section of that film, I think, was so impactful because of the fact you knew he was hanging off an actual plane. It wasn't CGI because Tom Cruise wouldn't allow it to be CGI. He demands that he would hang off the plane, right? That's why we love watching Mission Impossible. And I think that's, for me, why I still have hope for music in an AI world. Yes, there will be films out there that will always use CGI, and there'll be many films that will overkill it and it just feels really fake. And that will just be what it will be. That will just be a sector in the industry. And I think it's the same with music. I think there are incredible interpretations of, like, there's the band that's out on Spotify that's getting so many royalties.
The Velvet Sunset is
something like that.
I think so, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And admittedly, some of this, I mean,
it didn't sound bad.
It doesn't sound bad.
It's just generic.
If you didn't know, exactly. If you didn't know, you wouldn't necessarily question it. But there's something then about a real raw piece of music then that will forever, you know, hit that spot.
Well, it's not perfect.
Well, I think it's the emotional content as well. You know, it's the turn of phrase. You know, like I listened to that Velvet Sunset, whatever they're called. And the lyrics were just trash. It was just like every trope and cliche that you could possibly dish out. And the issue is the reason why it did that is because there are bands that are doing that.
I was going to say, the reality is that's actually happening.
Oh, of course. Learned. It takes the middle line of everything and just like right down the middle. This is guaranteed to be a top 40 hit. Like,
Which is interesting because, you know, if you were to, I bet there is no AI out there that would have the, have enough movement in its lane by its programmers to create or write lyrics like early Chili Peppers or like Beck, where it's just drivel. It's just random abstract concoctions that he's put together. It sounds really cool and I find it really interesting to listen to, but it's also like, has anyone even given it enough space to breathe to even come up with that? The interesting thing with the CGI that I was reading another article about, it wasn't. It was in Cannes. The guy was talking about it at Pixar, you know, and he was saying when computers started to be used, even just for like drafting, everyone thought that all of the drafters at Disney would be put out. But when computers started being used, they actually were employing like 20 times more people and their output it could increase. So it's like everyone that was using pen and paper thought I'm out of a job. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, now all my friends have jobs as long as we can use this computer. So it's like, there's always going to be technology that disrupts. It's just, are you going to figure out how you can fit in to that landscape?
That was Kahlenberg from DreamWorks. It was just to note that because it's worth, I think he's mentioned it in a few of his talks and it's really worth listening to him speak about AI because it's quite amazing, his perspective. It's very positive. It's very hopeful.
Yeah, I'm hoping that is what happens. I would prefer that AI, you know, fold my laundry rather than make my song.
Take your job.
I just had this conversation with someone else on the podcast. Yeah, like we've had this conversation many times. When it comes to voiceover, the really interesting thing for me is that when you're listening to a voice that was created with AI or like a synthetic voice, there's no lived experience behind that voice. And so it feels hollow without you knowing why.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. And that's kind of the whole CGI thing too, right? If it's too perfect, it just looks like it couldn't possibly be real. And then you can't suspend your disbelief. And then it ruins the film for me. Like, that's the end of it for me. Like,
yeah. Well, that, yeah. Particularly with films, because it's supposed to be transportative and it's supposed yeah. to potentially take you into this other world. And so if that, it's kind of like breaking the fourth wall, I guess, to a degree, when it's just like, oh, this couldn't have happened. So, you know, you're watching movies, essentially why we all care about them is because it's seeing other humans go through situations and how they deal with it, and to be put in that position to think how you might deal with it. And then if the position itself is flawed with technology removing your connection to it, then yeah, it's like, what's the point?
So
do you
true.
Think we're going to evolve as humans to the point where, like, three generations on, that part of the brain doesn't no longer exists? I was just thinking about, like, films in the 90s and, you know, Jurassic Park and early noughties films, where, you know, most of it was actually acted, you know, in a space, in a place. You know, Jurassic Park's interesting because that was early stages of CGI, I guess, in many ways. But there was something about that film that still felt like real. There was still emotion. Was it just the music? Like, how many elements do you need to be created by human in order to have that real sense yeah. of legacy?
I don't even think it's necessarily created by humans, because what you're going to have is, like, my nieces and nephews, et cetera, and their kids or whatever are going to grow up with a lot more augmented reality, virtual reality. So they're going to inherently have some form of emotional touch points connected yeah. with this fake, you know, created CGI aspect of our world. So I think we're, or at least I am, just in that interim period of a crossover where it loses me because I don't have that. Whereas I think as it develops yeah. and it's intrinsic to your life, and it has been since the beginning, you know, like kids on iPads now, you know, like all of that is so heavily linked to their development as people.
Oh, yeah.
And like all the augmented reality that they'll be having in that soon, if not already, is like,
haven't they already?
I'm sure they have. Yeah. It's more, I would say it's more if parents are allowing their kids to use augmented reality on their iPads from a young age, when a lot of people are trying to limit screen time and blah, blah, blah. I think once that gets past that and everything is there, and then like the other argument with all of that is that the people that are going to create the coolest shit next thing are the kids that have been on iPads since they were 1 year old with augmented reality, thinking, what should I do with this? This is, because that's not amazing to kids. Kids are like, yeah, this is just what the world is like. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just going to be normal. It's not going to be impressive at all to them. So it's like,
well,
then
they're
where
already
they take
saying,
it?
Yeah, they're already saying that certain parts of our learning experience are being stagnated because we're no longer doing certain things. Like, you know, we use calculators. Like, when the calculator came out, what, GPS? Oh my God.
Yeah.
I have, like,
I have no sense
of direction yeah. at all. If I did not have my GPS, I would be like dead in the water. That 100%.
Would be it. Yeah. 100%.
So, yeah. But we're starting to not learn these new things.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the AI is starting to take over what that was. Mm. And so we no longer develop that part of our brain.
Yeah.
I think
you know, when I was mentioning about the three generations on, I guess that's kind of my thinking is, like, do we just like no longer develop that part of the brain that has certain types of emotion towards certain things? Because I think Luke's right in that you connect an emotion to something that you know. It's like a memory. That's where nostalgia comes in. And is it, because I always ask myself, is it nostalgia is the reason why I miss, like, films like E.T. and Jurassic Park? Is there anything else from, like, you know, the 90s that, was it the way that they made the films, or was it just that's the films that I was first conscious of? And so in, like, three generations time, you know, into the future, is there certain parts of our emotion that actually just changes in the way that we develop? I think we often see ourselves as, like, physically evolving as humans, but do just parts of our brain just no longer develop because we don't need them anymore?
So true. And who knows what that will mean in the future? Maybe other parts of our brain will develop that haven't yet been developed.
Yeah.
So
100%.
I mean, we're using what, 20% of our brain if we're lucky?
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. There's a lot in there we don't know about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's 80% of your brain that's, well, it's not even like that we're not using it. It's that it's not been mapped or discerned what it is. And again,
yeah,
the AI consciousness,
we don't know quite what it is.
And that's like with all the, you know, intuits and mediums and people that, you know, say they can telepathically communicate, etc. It's like there's a whole bunch of other brain doing something, or, you know, like, that we just haven't figured out what it's doing. It, like you say, what could it do potentially in the future?
Yeah, I'm just more scared about how much of my brain, what percentage of my brain am I actually using in the morning before I've had my coffee?
Yeah, none.
Are you telling me I only use like 5% of my brain?
Yes.
Same.
I so get it. Gosh. Yeah.
I don't know if I'm insulted at myself for that.
Hi, I'm Drew Thurlow, founder of Opening Ceremony Media and former senior vice president of A&R at Sony Music. You're listening to the Audio Branding Podcast, a great place to learn about how powerful sound can be. If you want to understand how to harness that power in your own life, keep listening.
Well, when we're talking about future generations, I actually want to ask you both if there was one message about the power of sound that you'd want future generations to know, what would it be?
Ooh, that's a great question. I've never actually heard that question. Yeah,
that's deep.
I like to get philosophical here a little bit. Yeah.
I'm trying to think about something we haven't touched on yet. Have you got one, Luke?
The power. Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing I would want people to know about the power of sound in the future, it would just be to like trust themselves. I think it's so easy now, particularly with everyone trying to fit in and, you know, like the world of music and the world of being in music is not a particularly easy one. It's very rewarding, you know, and it's a privilege to be able to be in it. But it's not the easiest. You know, I've always said to people, if I put as much time into investment banking as I did into music, like, you know, I'd own Riverside and we'd be talking on my helicopter, I would imagine. Like, it's pretty...
I would have loved that, by
the
way.
Exactly. So in an alternate reality, it might be happening. So it's like, you're most likely not going to make enough money to compromise what you like. So just make whatever gets you excited, because that's the real power. I think that's the real power of sound, is feeling that sense of fulfillment when you are completely free within sound.
Wonderful.
If you want to get deep, Jody.
I definitely do. Yes.
I hope the future world doesn't look like... Have we all watched WALL-E, as in the Pixar film?
Yes.
You know,
the only thing that lived were Twinkies and...
Yeah, Twinkies, and they were just all in these chairs that floated around. And yeah, it was horrible. I hope we're not all like that. So when you said, what do you want the future people to know about sound or music? My brain went to that visual. I'd always want people to know that music began with humans understanding how to communicate with it, because we are inevitably going into this world where a lot more computer generated music happens. And that's not just digital music. It's even like there's so many plugins and pieces of software that can replicate drums and bass guitars. And Luke, we saw that, I can't remember who developed it, but it was a plugin, a piece of software that I will be able to play guitar very convincingly on the piano. It was incredible. But in order to be able to do that in a very convincing way, you have to understand how an actual guitarist plays guitar. And I would like to think, and maybe this is just maybe not a very smart answer in the sense that it's just what I believe personally for me, is let's not lose the art of how to actually create something in the first place, so that you can then be really creative with it in the future world. Because I think there's a deep importance in that, just in anything we do. That's not just music. It's like, how do we create a piece of AI technology that works all this crazy maths out? I think you've got to understand actually how and why somebody wants that problem solving in the first place. So to nicely segue it, I guess, back to sonic branding, I think you have to really understand how and why decisions were made in order to be more smart about those decisions in the future and push boundaries even further. But I also would contradict myself with that and say, you could also attack it intentionally not understanding anything about music in the first place. And maybe that's how, maybe we've exhausted all those routes, and maybe that's how something brand new gets made and the new genre of music gets made. I think about dubstep. How the heck was dubstep made? Which is just all these crazy, almost like industrial sounds hitting you quite aggressively from all angles. And I'd probably say that was from somebody that, because I think it was like sound cards, wasn't it? From
PlayStation.
Was it PlayStation or Sega?
It was on PlayStation. No, exactly. It was 100% PlayStation. The only reason dubstep exists was because somebody else created another technology.
Yeah, and created something
unrelated.
And approached it from a non-musical capacity. But then I guess did bring in musical elements at some point to create rhythmic patterns and all this, etc. But it was a mash of those two worlds, the human element, I think, and the digital unknown that created something brand new. So like with everything, you start with one answer and then you kind of move to the total opposite side.
The interesting thing with your answer there, George, is because the only reason that those like Scream and Benga could create music was because they could do it all on a PlayStation, because they didn't have instruments, computers were still very expensive, and they didn't necessarily have the ability to record. So like the only reason they could do it was because they hadn't been in the room, etc., with musicians.
So limitations made the creativity.
And then also maybe without that awareness, like you were touching on there, George, they just approach it from a completely different view. So the power of sound is just ignore everything that sound's ever given us and just do something on a computer. That's what we take away here.
I think a lot of it has to do with creation of music, too. The creation of sound is something that all of us can have, not just musicians, not just like everyone can pound on a drum. it's one of those things that is a shared human experience. And I think a lot of people don't give that its due.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes back to, you know, with both of those completely different angles and approaches to what we don't want to or do want to remember and don't want to remember, it still comes from an understanding of what moves us in some way, shape or form. When they were pulling apart that PlayStation, using the sound cards in weird ways, like all that process, there would be moments where they were like, oh, that's cool. And in the room together being like, whoa, what was that sound that we just made? That excitement, that kind of, we're still creating noise that communicates an emotion, and that emotion for them, I hope, was excitement or intrigue, whatever that is. And if we're putting all of those, if we can understand those emotions or just recognize that we're feeling them, sometimes that's enough in itself. It's just recognize we're feeling a certain emotion here. That's when you run with something. It's like when you have a good idea and you run with it for a full day because you're so excited, you're like exploring what that idea is. It's like that's still the same emotion, I think, that you have that leads you down some kind of intrigue path. Whether that's a brand that's intrigued you because they've used a certain sound, or whether or not it's just between your friends, you're exploring something because you've again had that same emotion. That's the thing we should never lose touch with, to of understanding or just feeling. You don't have to understand why, you just have to understand that that is something that you're feeling.
Yes, sound is emotion. Yeah, very much so. Yeah, well, thank you, both of you. This has been a really enlightening and interesting conversation. How can people get in touch with you to reach out to you for audio branding or for music composition?
I'd say LinkedIn's probably the place we're most active.
Website as well, Hear Me Out.
Website, Hear Me Out Music. Yeah, hearmeoutmusic.co. On there we have some of the examples we've talked about today. Our LinkedIn has a lot of just interesting conversations from, again, things we talked about today, like this idea of consciousness. When we have a conversation like that, we actively stick it somewhere so that we can engage with other people on that conversation. So I'd say those are the two easiest places to start out. Direct anybody from there.
Okay. Well, if anyone is interested in audio branding or having these deep sound conversations, you should definitely reach out to these two. They have a lot to say. And thank you very much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much, Judy.
Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time,